For many artists, it is tough, verging on torturous, to be creative and turn that creativity into a business. At the crux of the challenge is the dilemma of putting a price on their own work. How do you price creativity? How do you put a value on your own output that not only finds a market, but also recognizes and respects the time that you have put in to your artistic journey? There is no easy answer, but Kansas City fashion and textile designer and successful business owner Whitney Manny has most definitely worked it out. Her eclectic art fashion designs translate the aesthetics of street art into ready-to-wear, wearable art and textile designs and have graced a multitude of runway and gallery shows. She has become a content creator with Joann's Fabric, has won multiple artistic and business innovation awards. Her designs are purchased by clothing stores across the country. And last year, her designs became part of the costume wardrobe for Bel Air, the reboot of the 1990s classic hit, The Fresh Prince of Bel Air. Whitney says her work isn't done until everybody in the world believes fashion is art, and also that great things happen when we move outside our comfort zone. Additionally, she loves cinnamon popcorn, would like the fabric gabardine to disappear from the planet, and is firmly in the camp that pineapple on pizza is a good thing. Whitney Manny, what a delight to get to chat to you about all things art and fashion. Hello.
Hi, Diana. Thank you so much for having me.
I am definitely in the opposite camp to you when it comes to pizza, but I will eat all the black olives off your pizza.
Oh, yeah, because I do not like black olives.
But I am totally with you on gabardine. What makes it so heinous for you?
You know what? I think it's because I had a terribly failed project with gabardine when I think I was a sophomore in college still. And from that day forward, I just never worked with it. It was too finicky. It did not work well in my favor, and I have just never tried to work with it ever since.
You know, it reminds me of school uniforms in England.
Yes.
Ugh, it was horrible.
Yeah, a lot of school uniforms are made with gabardine. Yeah.
So like you, I started making my own clothes at 13, and my mom had an old hand-cranked Singer sewing machine. But unlike you, my imagination and my ability hit an early wall. So tell me about the mixture of practical need and teenage fashion vision that launched you as a designer, and how Barbie and American Doll were part of that story.
You know what? I asked for a sewing machine. It was my 13th birthday. 13 is like a big birthday. So it's like I got to repaint my room and I got a sewing machine. And I had never witnessed anybody using a sewing machine prior to that. My mama doesn't sew. I've never known my grandmamas to sew. It just was like, I want to try it. I want to do it. It really came from a selfish place of wanting to be able to keep my clothes as long as possible, because my thought was I can remix my old clothes into something new and I can keep my things, because I was growing tall constantly. And I think around that time, early 2000s, like DIY culture and upcycling, I think it was like maybe one of the first waves of that was happening around that time. So I was definitely inspired by what was happening in mainstream. And I remember too, like in a lot of our teen magazines, I'm gonna date myself, like Teen People, YM, like all of those magazines, they would have sections of like DIY. And I remember like, you know, 17 would have like these sections of like, here's what you can do to your tank tops, add this in, add that in. And like some of them, they would use sewing machines. I'm like, I want to do that. But the thing was, I always knew I would be an artist. I never really considered fashion as something that was possible until, you know, I got a bit older. But when I think about, when I look back on it, the toys that I enjoyed the most were the ones where I could create a story with. So like dramatic play, and like, you know, I had a costume trunk, and like my aunties, when they would get rid of their old jewelry or clothes or anything from back in their day, they would give them to me. And I had a costume trunk. I would play dress up all the time. I had all of my dolls until I was about 14, and really only got rid of them because my parents was like, listen, sis, we got to move across the country. You cannot take all of these with you. Otherwise, I probably would still have them all, because I just the idea of being able to quickly change personality and change who you are, but while still being genuine was so intriguing to me. And that's why I think I love Barbie so much, because she can be, you know, 300 different careers in one day, and who's going to stop her? but I also, like, my mama was an early childhood educator, so I always had access to, like, arts and craft supplies and stuff. And like, I would make little dresses and stuff for my Addie doll out of ribbon and cotton balls and just whatever was laying around the house, and would make like little rooms, Barbie rooms. I didn't have a doll house, but I would make rooms out of old shoe boxes. But again, something, just another place where I could tell a story and edit and curate. You know, think about it like that when you're younger. But when I look back at it, I'm like, I might have been, you know, like a little creative director in the making.
I mean, it sounds like even though as a teenager you were looking at magazines and getting inspiration, your ability to find inspiration from within kind of predates that. So, I mean, when you think about those early fashion years, how much of it do you feel like was outside inspiration versus just your interior sense of what you wanted to create in the world?
Yeah. And you know what, to be honest, I think a good part of that kind of independent play, independent study that is just within me naturally comes into play a little bit, because I'm a semi only kid. My siblings are significantly older than me. And I think when you just spend a lot of time alone, and I like being alone, it can go either way. I just be making up some stuff, and I crack myself up all the time. And I just am really in tune with listening to my inside voice and like cultivating that. And so I think that that helped a lot. So a lot of it does, I don't have an explanation for it. It just genuinely does come naturally, because nobody really told me no. And not saying like, oh, I was just balling out of control and spoiled beyond measure. Nobody told me no in terms of my capabilities and like my dreams.
Right. So when you were going to college, you went to the Kansas City Art Institute, even though they did not have a fashion design program. So you did fiber arts instead. Talk to me about that choice and how you made it work for you.
I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't. And this is, I always preface this. This is no shade. I'm thankful that I ended up where I ended up. KCAI was not my first choice. I was ready to go to Savannah, to SCAD. That was where I wanted to go. Mind you, I graduated high school in 2008. So the collapse, the economy, the recession.
Yeah.
And it was already going to be like an effort for me to go to college. Like, we knew like that was my track, but my parents have always been incredibly honest with me. My mom was just like, listen, if you go to SCAD, I don't know how you gonna make it, girl. You know, there's no scholarship. Like, you're gonna have to go where the money is. And at that time, we were living in Phoenix, Arizona. And so when I got the letter to go to KCAI, I was kind of like, okay, like, that's fine. But once we got the scholarship letter, it was like obvious choice. My 16, 17-year-old thinking was, if I get an acceptance letter into art school, it's meant to be. And then whatever school that I get the most scholarship money for, that's the school that I'm meant to be at. So both of those things happened with KCAI. I don't know at 32 if I would have that same thinking, but I'm glad that I did. I'm glad that I took the chance, because for me, my thought process was, you know, college was the last safety net. I didn't have that space to be like, oh, I'm finding myself, or it's like I get to grow up a little bit more. Like, no, this is it. You got to make it work, because it's really an all or nothing situation.
You said something in an interview that kind of relates to this time at Kansas City Arts Institute. And you said that you were the one that was out of kilter with everybody else. They were fiber artists and you were a fashion designer, and that you were able to expand into rather than shrink from the feeling that your experience and expectation were different from the other people in your class. And what was important to you was acting before believing, which is such an incredible concept. The importance of making a statement and then living that intention. Can you talk a little bit about where that determination, that it's such a strong philosophy of acting before believing, where did that come from? How has that guided you?
I don't know that I still don't know that I have a good answer. And you're right. Prior to this, the fibers department, it was strict fine arts. I mean, KCAI it's a fine arts school. And so my class, it was about three of us that wanted to do wearables. Everybody that was upperclassmen, they were all in the track to be basically conceptual or gallery artists. And then on to even narrow that down further, I wanted to do ready to wear. I had no desire to create clothing that was not functional, that could not be mixed into an existing wardrobe. And I did not want to do costume. And so then that is what really further separated me from everybody else. They came around to it. By the time I graduated, people got the vision, and I think that they get the vision even better now. But that idea to just keep on keeping on, I mean, that I think about the verse, you know, faith without works is dead. And that kind of rang true for me. And I just saw also how much my family, how much was on the line for me to even be able to go to school. And I think I didn't want to let them down as far as their investment, as well as I know how much it took for me to even get to school too. I can't, to be honest, like, I wasn't a bad student, but if I could have not gone to school, that would have been great too. Like, I did well in school, but I did not enjoy the process of school as far as the social aspect of it, the schedule, the taking tests. You know, I was always in these accelerated programs thinking like, what am I even doing here? Like, I'm not smart enough to even be in this situation. So you have those lessons early of like, you have to keep up with everybody else. On top of like in these situations where I'm like one of the only Black student, or you keep adding on these things where I'm in a different socioeconomic status than everybody else, or, you know, all these other things that kind of make me stick out even more and more and more. You're either broken by it, or you use all of those scripts and scraps to create a foundation. And I just think that that speaks to the strength of my parents, honestly, to not let me rest on, oh, well, I can't do this because this is that and a third, or I can't be a part of this because these people have more than me and da 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 da.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your designs. They are so vibrant and color saturated and beautifully assertive.
Oh, I like that.
You say you're you're inspired by street art and how cultural movements influence the urban landscape. Tell us more about those inspirations and your design process.
When I was in school, I was having such a hard time articulating what I really wanted to create. I've envisioned this since 13. Mm. It was just kind of hard. I had all the pieces. I had the ideas, the elements. It was just one day everything clicked and it all made sense. And it was when I did a study trip to New York the summer before my senior year. And when I was there and I was in a different space, I was out of the Midwest. I was seeing art just literally on the sidewalks and your people watching. I'm like, that's it. That's it. And while I was there, I was not allowed to work with a sewing machine. I just had paper and spray paint. And I was literally creating mock-ups of stuff with paper and creating stencils by hand and all of this stuff. And when I say I'm inspired by the aesthetics of street art, mainly the way that the principles that street artists abide by, you're working with your environment instead of against it. So I take that idea when I'm working with the body, the speed at which you're creating your work. If a process takes too long, I'm checked out. Like, I'm not going to see it through and it's going to show up in my work. And just being able to truly combine color, pattern, and texture. And all of that stuff did not make sense to me until that trip. So when I came back home, it was like, okay, let's go ahead. First critique, I'm ready. I'm ready for whatever y'all feel like y'all got from me, because actually this makes sense. And actually this is completely viable. Actually, I don't have to give up on this idea of being a fashion designer. I'm going to go ahead and do it. I'm going to show y'all how I'm going to rock it out.
So how do you produce your textiles? I mean, you're in charge of not only the design, but also the quality control. I mean, everything comes down to you. So how do you make them? How do you trust the people that create them with you?
It's a one-woman show over here right now. I joke, you know, I wear all the hats, but I know how to make them.
I love that.
So, and really textile design, I took one workshop during my college career and it changed my life. My semester of surface design and that one workshop of digital textile design really changed my life, and I'm so appreciative for it. But again, as much as I am formally educated, I'm also self-educated. But they start out, all of them start out as hand processes. So sketches, drawings, paintings, photography, collage, dyeing fabric, and then it's digitally manipulated. I remember when I was doing like my first Casey Fashion Week collection, and I dyed some fabric and I was like, it turned out too good. And I'm like, I'll never know how to replicate this. First of all, like it was like 3 a.m, you know? And I'm like, no matter how many formulas I wrote down and I meant, you know, oh, this was my tie-ups or whatever, it'll never look exactly like this. And my brain immediately was like, how can you have a viable business if you can't replicate something? And so that's where the point of where I really kind of started involving digital printing of my fabrics, hard body. Now, I don't have a fabric printer, but if anybody out there that's got like an extra $17,000 to $28,000 laying around, let me know. I will gladly accept and I will print you some fabric and we'll keep WM moving. But I outsource to services like Spoonflower. But I can sit and design fabric for hours. Like I have hundreds and hundreds of files. I hoard everything and I'm constantly snapping pictures. I'm constantly like the days where it's like, I don't have too much to do today, or I'm just kind of in a creative block. I'll just sit and do mark making exercises with different markers or my airbrush gun. And, you know, if I have time, I love dyeing fabric. And this is perfect fabric dyeing weather right now. I have a garage door at my studio space. I'll just let that door up and I'll just dye whatever blank swatches I have and just keep them. I don't necessarily need them for a project right now, but it's record keeping. And when it's a project, a perfect project comes up and I'm like, boom, I know what to grab. Let me go ahead, scan that, take a photo or whatever. And we're going to create a repeat. We're going to create a print.
When you're working with clothing stores across the country, I mean, every year we're told, you know, what is the hot color? You know, this is the Pantone color of the year. Well, you'll have to wear this color this year. How much are you responding to what they're requesting? And how much is your name so strong that you set the pace? You tell them what they're getting.
You know what? And honestly, to a full moment of transparency, you know, wholesaling is one of my Achilles heels right now. And it's something that we're trying to figure out. Where I can have a more streamlined process. A lot of times, like my retail partners, I just send like, hey, this is what's new and happening. What do you want? Do you want anything? And I kind of keep it moving because it's like, if they don't buy it, I mean, I know that my customer, my B2C customer will. So I'm just kind of like, I have multiple avenues to be able to get this work out there. But it is something that I would like to kind of fine tune just a little bit more.
So like you said, you're the only person, you're wearing all of the hats, you've got all of this creative vision, inspiration side, but then also you have a business to run. So you're an entrepreneur as well. And you do everything. You manage customer service and the accounting and maybe cleaning the bathroom, because when you're an entrepreneur, you do everything. So when you wear your entrepreneur hat, what are the key skills that you've really either had to develop or really relied on that have got you to where you are?
You know, I think one of the biggest compliments that I've gotten in my career, it was with a buyer, and she's like, wow, artists are usually never this analytical. And I'm like, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. But you know what? That's just me as a person. I mean, when I was in school, even when I was younger, my planners, post-it notes, to-do lists, important to me. So being able to plan big, you have to be able to plan big picture while also looking at, okay, what's happening within the next 4 hours. So being able to balance that while also thinking of where are we going to be at within the next 3 years and actively doing the task it takes to accomplish both of those timelines. I don't know how I manage it. I will say this year it's been like, okay, I think I'm doing a little too much, but I am hiring my first assistant this summer. And so Woo! I'm excited. I'm so excited. She'll be working with me part-time. And so I'm excited to see how that changes my studio practice. But I would definitely say that big picture thinking, being able to work in your business and on it at the same time. Accounting, definitely. I'm not a numbers person, but having a good handle on budget and what does that mean, and developing streams of income, because as an independent artist, if your online shop is not hitting that week, the people that you owe money to do not care. you gotta be able to, you know, have several revenue streams and kind of like paying attention to business trends as well, and consistently educating yourself on that. Cause art school, you don't learn business stuff at all. Like, so I definitely, you know, took it upon myself to take advantage of continuing education opportunities and workshops and books and mentors and all that stuff to kind of learn those things. And marketing, you know, marketing, accounting, and planning are just like the consistent things that I have to take care of. Marketing can be so intense, so hard, and it can feel like you coming up short consistently, but you never know when it's going to pay off.
So shifting gears a little bit, when you look through the work from this year's Visual Arts and Design Showcase,
yes.
What are some of your overall thoughts on art as a narrative? Because there's so much narrative in your work. What are some of your overall thoughts as you look through the collection of work?
So just off tops, I was so impressed with everybody's work. And I mean, we did judging for 2 days straight, and it felt so organic in the conversations that we were able to have with each student, just came about so organically and nice, and they had great flow to it. And I was so impressed that the students were able to articulate what they wanted us to feel and experience through their work, through their written statements, and through their videos that were on the website, as well as with like being knowledgeable to answer the questions that we had while we were on Zoom together. So shout out to everybody that submitted work, because y'all did it for real. And I have been in that space before. I know how nerve-wracking that can be. And I just thought that also everybody dealt with such heavy subject matter, but they did it in such a way where it didn't make me feel like, as a viewer, it didn't make me feel like, oh, I feel bad for this person. It made me feel like I want to see them work through this. What's the next step to this piece? Because I can tell that you're working through something right now, but I know that you can push it a little bit further. Like, what's next for this? Because I want to see that growth through not only the technique and the concept of the artwork, but for that person. When those certain things and when projects feel so tough and then you're like, what the heck is going on the other side of that pushback is breakthrough. And I'm so excited for them to be able to get to those points of breakthrough through their work. And as young artists, you'll have several of those moments. It's not just that one big bang where it's like, boom, everything clicks. You'll keep having those moments of clarity. And it's so interesting to see how they worked through that and how they did not make everything obvious. I also really enjoyed that. I love when work is clever and you're able to dissect it and really just kind of dig in, have a full buffet. Mm-hmm. I think they really just did a good job of that.
I mean, what advice do you have for aspiring artists and designers?
Ooh, well, so much. On a logistics standpoint, get as much business knowledge as you can. Make sure you are going about everything as legal as you can. If you plan to be a professional artist, I think the earlier you can do that, the better. And if there's some areas that you know you can't handle, well, start saving and figuring out how you can pass it off as soon as you can. I also think that artists need to know a little bit about everything. I use so many different mediums within my one umbrella of work. Yes, I'm a fashion designer, but, you know, I have to do the creative direction for my photo shoots. I have to take my product photography. I have to edit photos. I have to edit video. I know how to create stamps. I screen print. You know, I have to know a little bit about everything to create my work. And I think that's what gives my work the interest and layers that it does, mm-hmm. as well as thinking outside the box as far as inspiration goes. My work would be so one note if my work was only inspired by what is on the runway right now. You know, look outside of fashion. If you're a photographer, look outside of photography and film for inspo and just consistently be collecting it and keep it on hand because you just never know when you need it. And I think also just kind of like having peer support is good. I think people kind of take that for granted because when you're in school, you know, you can look to your left and to your right. It's a student around you who's going through the same stuff that you're going through. And once you get out of school and you're in your studio practice, it can get lonely. It's going to take work. It's going to take a little bit more work than, you know, when you're on a college campus, but finding those like-minded artists, whether they in your city or not, to have conversations with. And, you know, it doesn't have to be that you have a critique all the time. Maybe you just want to complain for, you know, half an hour together. And that works.
Well, there's a good advice. I think that idea of gathering as many skills as you can. And like you said, you know, really learning the business side of what an art career looks like, because that isn't something that is obviously available to people right. going to art school. I read somewhere that your dream is to have your own building, which not yes. only has your studio, but is a community art center. What I love about it is it's going to have hot pink walls yes. and gold glitter floors and space to roller skate. So I'm wondering how close you are to that gold glitter roller skate art studio.
I think I'm pretty close, honestly. I think I'm pretty close. I'm closer than what people think. But, you know, I have my friends make fun of me because I have a special skill of just not saying anything until something is final. And I'll just mention it like, oh, I need to get a loaf of bread. And also, by the way, my clothing is featured in this award-winning TV show. You know, and it's like, it's not that serious because I will say this is also some advice. I'm working through this too, y'all. And I think this comes in a part of imposter syndrome and maybe a little bit of my experience as a professional and as a student. I have a terrible habit of just saying something so matter of fact about my achievements. Mm. And when people call me an award winning designer, I'm like, oh, okay. Is that true? And I'm like sitting there thinking through it because I'm like, I don't want people to think I'm a fake, I'm a fraud or nothing. But you got to own it. At a certain point, you have to own when you have achieved and you have done some things that are really, really, really cool and relish in those achievements, because otherwise life will just start to feel like a to-do list. And while I want to make sure I am consistently always being a humble person, I want to make sure I'm still building myself up and loving on myself and appreciating what I have done as a fashion designer too.
And that can be so hard to do for mm-hmm. all of us. Well, yeah. Whitney Manny, it has been a delight chatting with you. I feel sure that New York and Paris Fashion Weeks are in your future if you want that.
Yeah.
but I think that your style and your vision and your grit, your determination will really open any door that you want opening. And I am going to be following your career closely.
Thank you so much.
You can find out more about Whitney and shop her collection at whitneymanny.com. And thank you so much, not only for sharing your artistic journey, but also for being one of this year's Visual Art and Design Showcase jurors. Thank you so much, Whitney.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.